50,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 29th of October, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we have news, views, stuff you can use. Wait, you're holding up a finger?
Yeah, I got to at least say happy birthday to my daughter who turns 30 today.
Is she going to be mad at you for saying her age?
No.
Okay.
She better not be. I'm not ashamed of mine.
Another 10 years before she's angry with
people
telling her age, right?
Too bad. I just did.
Too bad. You just did, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Don't forget.
Nobody will tell her.
That's exactly it. Give us a call. I'll start with the news. Ubuntu 6.10, Edgy Eft is here. It's finally arrived. Ubuntu 6.10 is available for download. All of them. Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Edge Ubuntu, Xubuntu. It's the release of both the desktop and server versions. They were released on the 26th. That's Thursday. Canonical is claiming that Ubuntu 6.10 offers a cleaner, sharper design together with new and enhanced desktop applications and advances in security. It also boasts significantly faster boot up times and leading-edge free software programs. Now, if you're looking for... Now, this new 6.10 will be maintained for 18 months with free security updates for all users. If you're looking for longer term, it's still Ubuntu 6.06. LTS, that's still got 5 years of free support. For all of their products, of course, you can get full telephone and online support on commercial terms. That's available globally. The desktop version introduced a host of new features, an improved interface, a wide variety of new applications and desktop tools. So if you're thinking about Linux, you ought to take a look at Ubuntu 6.10. It's completely free and a very nifty product all the way around. I'm running 6.06 at the moment right here, I think. Am I? Yes, I'm running 6.06 here and at home. I like the long-term support for my home desktop, but I may turn this laptop into 6.10.
There it goes.
It's just a matter of click, 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 and I'm done. So that's easy enough to do. But we're going to go to the phones right now because that's easy enough to do as well. And our first caller is Marty from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Who am I talking to?
You're talking to Nick Francesco.
Oh, hi, Nick.
Dave Enright, Steve Ray, okay. Rob Linton.
Never called before. Just, I had an error message pop up on my Norton.
Uh-huh.
There's a Norton antivirus 2006 has encountered an internal program error.
Yep.
There's a big number after it.
Yep.
And it says print this document. Now, first of all, when I installed this Norton, I needed help because I'm not very literate in computers.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm sitting here saying, okay, if I uninstall this thing like it says, am I going to have trouble reinstalling it?
Well, what you want to do is uninstall it, tuck it away, and then go up and get AVG. Which? Norton 2006 right now, we've run into, here's the rundown. Mm-hmm. Norton 2006, McAfee, and the AOL privacy tools.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those programs slow a machine down to a virtual crawl because they demand so much of the resources and everything else, and they try to do so much of what Windows is already doing that it gets in its the way of itself. So it's just, you know, a big cumbersome task, have you, that you're putting onto your system that you really don't, you know, really need, that if you get rid of it and go to AVG, that's very lightweight, doesn't take a lot of resources, and, oh, it runs a heck of a lot better than any one of those.
And plus
products.
We're hearing from a lot of people all over the net that the Norton products are causing these problems.
Yeah.
Well,
and even
the last couple of versions said, worth, too.
A friend of mine said you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Your friend was right.
Because even the removal tools don't remove all of it. You know, and it's a good idea just to go ahead, uninstall it, get rid of it, chalk it up, you know, even though you just probably paid 20 or 30 bucks for it.
No, I bought a couple of years. I got $60-something here.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, consider it a lesson learned.
So there's no way to probably recoup that cost.
No, unfortunately.
Not after you open the box.
Yeah.
Most stores won't take it back.
How much is AVG?
Free.
Free.
Yeah. So, you know, you can use this.
Always a good number.
Free is the best number.
And if you're worried about firewall, you can also get zone alarm free. So, you know, even though you paid, it's a lesson you paid to learn. And we've recommended some products here that you can use for free and not have to worry about it.
And you can get a good list of all of those over at the Security Tango website, securitytango.com. Click on the Let's Dance button. That's a way to clean out your machine of any possible viruses or whatever. And in the process of doing that, you'll also download all of these products we've been talking about, AVG and...
SecurityTango.com.
SecurityTango.com.
Yep. And that will give you a list of stuff?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. And AVG's in there and the Zoom Alarm is in there?
Yep. And SpyBot and AdAware.
Go for it.
For all the anti-spyware tools as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Go for it. Okie doke.
All right.
Thanks, Marty.
And yeah, that was another thing. Like I say, just to add for you two guys, this AOL firewall privacy software that they're putting on there.
Yeah.
I had a machine. And all right. This was a decent machine, too. I mean, it was a good Pentium 32. It was an AMD 3200 plus. Had a gig of memory. It ran like a Pentium 3 with 128 meg.
Yeah, I don't know anybody.
So much overhead.
I mean, the problem, you just click on something. I could go away, go up, get a cup of coffee, come back down to the shop area, and the icon that I just clicked on was just coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
The minute I took the software off, it's like, whoa, this is a whole new machine.
And the problem is compounded because the contracts a lot of the computer vendors make with Symantec and McAfee to include software on the computers. And, you know, the first problem is people don't realize it's usually a 30 or 60-day demo or trial.
Right.
And after those 30 days, your subscription stops updating and you have to buy it. So they think they have it pre-installed. And then so that's what they stick with when the subscription does run out.
Yep. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you folks patiently waiting on the phone. You are listening at 15 minutes after the hour to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 22.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, Apple says it has the cure for the shutdown blues. Apple's offering a firmware update that the company claims will help alleviate random shutdown issues with its MacBook notebooks. Apple posted the update, the MacBook SMC firmware update 1.1, on its website Thursday, October 26th. They say that this will help MacBook's internal monitoring system and stop the computer from shutting down at random. Now, the interesting part about this is if you go to MacBookRandomShutdown.com, which is where all this started, a kid named Matthew Swanson from Atlanta founded this site after his wife experienced problems with her 2 gigahertz MacBook. Swanson contends that the problems with the MacBook's heat sink. Once the heat sink is replaced, the notebook's work and the shutdowns end. But in the last update, Apple is saying that it's a software fix. So the thing that's now going around the web is whether or not what's happening is that the firmware update actually just bypasses the issue and lets the OS continue running even though it's overheated. So
yeah, that was the nearest thing that we could sort of figure out is that there are actually sensors on the heatsink to tell the computer how hot it's running. If the computer gets too, and this is common for all computers, if the computer gets too hot, it will shut down rather than damage itself.
Right.
So the software, the firmware upgrade must be, you know, changing how it measures too hot.
Right. Exactly. And whether or not that's good for the MacBook or not good for the MacBook. But one way or the other, if you're one of those people who's been experiencing the random shutdowns, maybe getting that update is a good idea for you. We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Ginny from Pittsford. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Good morning. I'd like to ask your opinion on a software product to see if it's legitimate and if it will work with AVG and Zone Alarm. It's called Spyware Terminator, and you can download it at spywareterminator.com.
Sounds like none of us have heard of it before.
Yeah, no, and...
And there's sort of a general problem in that a lot of fake anti-spyware programs have come out that just infest your machine more and then get you to pay for the software to uninfest it.
Yeah, clean what they put on there.
Okay, because it's totally free.
So is all the stuff in the Security Tango, and that we've tested. So this may be a perfectly legitimate product. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
And I've never seen it before, and I'm not at all certain what else... it may or may not do to your system, so I
can't really say until we play around with it.
It's your call, but I wouldn't necessarily trust it.
I mean, if you're using the Adware and SpyBot, you're pretty well covered. And the reason we recommend using two products as opposed to one is Adware goes wide. In other words, it checks a few things in the registry, but goes deeply into all the programs on your machine. Whereas the SpyBot, that doesn't go wide, you know, as far as checking programs. It only checks in the registry. So you got one that's going outside, covering all the programs, and the other program goes deep into the registry, this way covering both aspects of your computer.
Okay.
And then you're covered. That's why saying one program will cover them all, you really can't.
You can't.
No.
And there also seems to be a couple of different programs called Spyware Terminator. Some are very bad.
Okay.
This one might be a good one.
Save yourself, you know, the effort of messing up your machine, and you know, have fun surfing.
It also seems to call safe a couple of products that I'm not a big fan of that are actually
spyware.
But they're ad producers.
Oh, okay.
You know, and this is saying they're safe. I'm personally not a big. I'm not. I wouldn't trust it.
Okay, I appreciate your input.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right, our next caller is Charlie from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Charlie. What's your question?
Yeah, having a problem with Flash Player getting it to load. Tried to open some videos in Roadrunner, and it comes up that it's an FLV file, and you can't play them. I've looked in the ad remove programs. Flash Player isn't listed there, but you go to their site and they test it and it say it's installed on the machine.
Well, there's two different components. There's the web plugin for Flash that lets you play Flash videos inside of a web page. And then there's the standalone Flash video player.
Okay.
So it sounds like you've got the web plugin installed and working, but not the standalone program.
And where would you get the standalone?
From Adobe.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to get it. Does that generally come with XP or?
No.
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 Oh, no, none of those would. Those are all standalone programs that belong to somebody else somewhere, and you would get them by going to Adobe's website. Right on the main page, there's Get Adobe Flash Player. You can see the button. Click on the button. That'll take you to the Download Now site.
I've done that.
Did you then?
For some reason, it doesn't load.
It's installing the web plugin, but not the standalone player, apparently, which might be a separate download. They expect you to do all the web viewing through the web and not download the file separately. Or here, drag the FLV file onto your web browser and let it play in the web player.
That would work.
This is the 5-minute service.
I will try that.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Give that a shot. I don't know what that was, but we're going to take...
a lot of pointing of fingers in there.
We got the...
I didn't... Don't blame me. Wasn't my fault.
We apparently have both Laurel as and I Hardy throw somebody in the back room.
As I throw somebody under the bus.
You can tell when he's lying. It's because his lips are moving.
Yeah, exactly. So now, without me saying anything, we now know that Rob and Glenn are in the back room pointing fingers at each other and blaming each other for what's going on. Boys, keep your hands off the buttons till it's time. That's all I'm telling you right now. Nice. We have, do not try this at home. We are professionals. This is what we do. Did we lose?
That other one's gone.
Did we lose Charlie? All right. But Charlie, what you want to do is, there are two things you can do here. One is to, as Steve said, drag the file right onto the, your web browser and that'll do it. But the other thing that you could do is, is find the actual Flash player on Adobe's website and download that
and install it,
which would be separate from the web browser plugin.
Yep.
Right. Now this does say Adobe Flash Player Download Center, so maybe I don't know, but that's what it says it is.
Nick, I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
Last night I was at a dinner for the Rotary Club,
and
a couple of people came up to me and said, "Hey, I listen to you guys on Wham every Sunday, and you know, do you know anything about computers?" And they asked me this.
Yeah.
After I got up off the floor from laughing my tail off,
yeah,
I said, no, we just pretend, or I pretend. You know, you guys don't pretend. But they said, you sound like you guys have so much fun. And I said, we act.
We all hate each other.
No, we have a great time. That's what, she's like, you guys sound like you have such a great time on the air.
Yeah, we do.
Well, that's
the only reason we do this is because it's fun.
Oh, that's it. I mean, we're not making millions. We don't have condos down in Florida.
Well, you don't.
What?
Glenn does.
Yeah, Glenn does.
Well, I ran into the same thing on Friday there. Yeah. I was doing the security for the Ronald McDonald sale.
Right.
And a number of the folks that stopped in, and as they're going out, you're Dave. You do love the show. Listen to Sunday. And a number of folks, matter of fact, one woman says, you're the cause of it all.
Uh-oh.
And I go, what? Because here they're walking out with these bags. She goes, you're the cause of it all, because she heard me talking to this other person. I go, what? My husband, all the way home from church, we got to make sure we get out of church on time. I can't stand around and talk because he's got to get in the car and start listening to you folks all the way home.
That's what somebody said last night. Yeah, I love listening to you on the way home from church or the way into church.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than a young, gorgeous thing. My God, you're Nick Francesco. This is great.
And then
my dad listens to you. Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, I mean, I've been here since
all my groupies look like me, unfortunately.
Right. Well, I've been a Wham since I was 18, and all my
3 weeks.
Yeah. That's right. All my friends would say, hey, my grandfather listens to you on soundbites. Or when you were doing news on Saturday morning, my grandmother heard you and said, is that your friend? And it's just like, it's cool, but it's just kind of funny. All my friends, I tell my friends, Wham, Wham? What's that?
Yeah, right. Wham, no, I don't know. I'm a DJ for one of the hip rock stations in town. That's me. Yeah, it's we do have fun here. That's the only reason we do this. It's and people are always stopping and saying, how do you know all this stuff? And I always tell them,
too much time on your hands.
No, I always tell them we're making up the answers.
Well, that's
you
right.
guys are asking the questions.
And it just happens to be that it's working.
Exactly,
and it's unbelievable.
And we're doing good.
Yeah, when people come up and say, well, "Hey, I took your advice," I always go, "Uh oh."
That's that's why we say, "Give it a try and call us back. Let us know if it worked for the next time we say it."
Yeah, exactly.
If it didn't work, we won't say it again.
And then we'll know.
Scratch that one off our list.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. We have Dave Enright, we have Steve Ray, we have Rob Linton. The mighty, mighty Glenn Lamberts is in to give you the news, the weather, the sports, the important information, the stuff that you really want to know. Yay, Glenn! And the crowd goes wild. And we'll be back. And there's people right now holding up their cell phones. Freebird, Glenn Lamberts.
It's a lynch mob is what it is.
Exactly. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Huge Orient. Still 8 on Wham.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it is 34 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites. We'll all be at Glenn's condo in the summer, not in the winter.
Yes.
Ride the bike down.
Exactly.
See, that's the problem. Yeah. A lot of my boss and her family and a lot of her friends are all winter people, and they ski and snowboard and whatnot. And I hate the snow.
Sure. So you're left in the store all winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And in Rochester, that season's a whole lot longer than the summer. Yeah. Yeah. All right. For those of you who've been waiting, a lot of people don't buy. They wait for the next thing. They wait for the next thing.
There's always something better coming.
When's the best time to buy? We always tell them yesterday.
Last week.
You're right. Yeah, I just bought, so now's a good time for you to buy. Something new's coming out. And here it is. There's another reason to keep on waiting. Details on the new Intel quad-core Kent Field chips will be released next Wednesday night, and systems will begin shipping soon after. According to OEM sources, the first previews and most likely pricing of the new chips will be released on Wednesday, November 1 at 9 p.m. Pacific time. That's midnight our time. OEMs will likely begin taking orders on or around that date, with shipments tentatively scheduled for Monday, November 15th. AMD's 4x4 platform and Intel's Kent Field quad processor are similar in some respects. Originally, the Kent Field data were scheduled to be released on November 15th, which left OEM scrambling to finalize both production and review systems in time for Christmas. Reviews of the chips concluded it's great for video. Gaming performance will depend on how many application threads the games include. Single-threaded games won't see much performance at all. Multi-threaded applications like video editing will experience significant improvement. So if you're looking to buy a quad-core processor for games, maybe not necessarily going to do you any good, at least until they rewrite all the games. But if you're looking for it for things like video editing and stuff like that, it will depend entirely on the software you buy as to whether or not you get any benefit out of the quad core.
We've heard from people on the net that have already crammed two of these quad core processors into the Apple Mac Pro, their high-end machine. So it's an 8 processor computer, and it just screams.
Well, it would, because most of the Apple stuff is multi-threaded.
Especially
same
the
thing
video,
with Linux.
Yeah,
right.
The video and audio applications.
Exactly. All right, our next caller. I have no idea who our next caller is because Dave seems to be... all right, we'll go for with Jim from Shortsville, New York.
There.
Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I downloaded the Security Tangle.
Yes.
I ran the Security Tangle. And it seems like after I had run it, that Adware wants to come up and do a virus scan on every document that I open, and it does a virus scan on everything whenever I boot up.
Adware doesn't do virus scans.
Well, yeah. something says...
AVG, maybe.
Well, it seems like Adware is always at the brunt of this thing, so...
Well, you can...
Anywhere.
There's an option in Adware so that it runs on startup and does a spyware scan every time you start the computer, and that's under options or settings somewhere.
Right, and if you changed it to do that, then it definitely will. So the best thing to do is to
so
go
how
back...
How can I get at it?
Well, in Adware itself, go into, I forget if it's options or settings.
It looks like a gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little thing that looks like a gear. And you open that up, and one of the choices will be run on startup, and you can uncheck that, and then you'll be fine.
Okay, now will it try to do a virus scan every time I open it?
It doesn't
Adware
do
doesn't do virus scans. Adware does checks for
spyware.
Oh. Okay, what is causing this thing to do a... This happened after I did the Security Tangle.
Yes, and what we're saying is if it's Adware coming up, it's because somewhere along the line, and I find that odd because normally I think it isn't set, but at some point that got set, so all you have to do is uncheck that.
Okay.
And
now,
the same thing with the AVG antivirus scan. You can have it scan your computer every time it starts up, which is safest, but then most annoying because then you have to wait for it to finish.
Right,
and whether you or someone else set those, again, in both cases, it's under the preferences, whether they call it preferences
or
settings.
Well, when they're installing, quite often, folks, if the cursor wanders and they accidentally click on an option that they didn't really mean to instead of clicking the next, I've seen that happen. And
explain that again, please.
What happens is when you're doing an installation, you may click on the wrong thing. So, that may be what happened there.
The cursor
because you get several choices as you're setting it up. And really, all you have to do is keep clicking next, next, next. But if you accidentally clicked something else, that could make that happen. So change those and you'll be fine. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, at 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, those of you who have been playing with Internet Explorer 7 and have finally downloaded it.
Why?
Too bad.
Yeah.
There's a Danish security vendor, Secunia. Last week, as you may remember, they announced that there was a flaw that could put you at risk online. Well, this week they found another one. It's Bug of the Week. This one allows hackers to put a fake address in one of the browser's pop-up windows. Could be used to trick a victim into inadvertently downloading something from what appears to be a trusted website. Microsoft, after their initial investigation, say that they believe there is, quote, an issue, unquote. The problem could allow attacker to spoof a legitimate website. So we'll see. We'll keep following this and see how long or how quickly Microsoft actually fixes this, but they admit there's a flaw. Oh, excuse me, they admit there's an issue, and we'll go from there and see how long
that takes.
It'll
probably be next month's patch.
Internet Explorer 7 is a lot of fun. I've been playing with it. I just don't find anything in it that I don't already have.
That's been in Firefox for a while now.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't find anything. I mean, it's a catch-up release. Maybe, you know, next time they'll do something innovative. This time it's strictly catch-up. Our next caller is Jerry from Penyan, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. I hope I don't lose you because my power's been going on and off a little bit.
Oh, I am so sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, I have a Intel iMac, and we were on Adelphia for my cable, and so we've been switched over to Roadrunner. Everything works fine, except sometimes when I try to send mail out, it says that it can't find an outgoing mail server. And so
does this happen all the time or rarely?
Not all the time, just every so often. And under in preferences, accounts, I'm using the
right.
The Mac mail program.
Right.
The outgoing mail server, I have that listed, and I have it checked as default. And when mail fails to go out, I can choose another server. So I choose this server, and it goes out right away.
Well, what you should only have one server listed. What are the servers you have?
I just have one listed, and it just shows up.
What it sounds like is a DNS problem, and you might want to talk to the folks at Roadrunner. In your area,
I've been hearing about this recently, and Roadrunner is moving through some changes, and I think some of it is catching up to people. Right now, the current mail server is smtp-server.rochester.ro.com.
Right.
And it looks like, from what I've been reading on the Roadrunner site, they're consolidating a lot of their servers, so you won't be going through a Rochester server. You might be going through twc.rr.com or something like that.
Okay, I get my mail through Hotmail. And so what I have as my server is, I believe that works, it's HTTP mail colon and then the first part of my email address. And that works.
Really?
Yeah. It shouldn't.
No.
Well, Hotmail is web-based email. You don't use a pop mail program to read
web
mail.
Yeah, you just go, because that stays on Hotmail.
Yeah. I know. I don't care. It works.
Mostly.
Well, typically what you would do is your Roadrunner email address they gave you when you signed up for Roadrunner is what you'd use with Apple Mail. To read Hotmail, you'd go onto the website with a web browser like Safari or Firefox.
Right, but I'd have to change my email address to use the Roadrunner mail.
No, they gave you an email address.
Are you using a product called Webmail Retriever?
No. I don't have any third party.
Yeah, what he's saying, Steve, involved. Though, is he's afraid that, you know, if he uses the Roadrunner one, that he's got to tell all the folks that now they've got to change his their email address for him versus his Hotmail.
No, you have two email addresses. They can use either one they want.
That's right.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people don't want to change that. What it sounds like is there's a if you're using Hotmail, this makes a lot of sense. The Hotmail web servers are very overloaded because so much spam goes into and out from Hotmail. And what it sounds like is happening is that every once in a while, you catch the Hotmail server at a moment where it cannot respond.
It's just so jammed.
Because it's so overloaded. And what happens is you then try it again a second later, and it works fine. That's pretty rare on any server except the ones like at Hotmail and Yahoo because they're so overloaded. If you're going to stick with Hotmail, I'm sorry, but you're pretty much going to live with that. That's just the way it's going to continue to work. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 53 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites. Vista, folks, Vista has slipped. PC manufacturers that expected to get their hands on the final version of Microsoft Windows Vista OS on November 1 may have to wait several weeks. Microsoft originally targeted next Wednesday for Vista's release to manufacturing, but a last-minute bug that took most of the Vista team by surprise caused an unexpected delay. The Vista team discovered the bug, which would totally crash the system, requiring a complete reinstall on Friday, October 13th, of course. The team fixed the bug a week later, but work on the correction has delayed delivery of the operating system to PC makers.
Which makes you wonder, what are the issues? Haven't they found?
I get calls all the time. I'm having trouble with Vista. Yes, you are. Thank you for calling. Bye. Yeah. And I hang up. I do not support beta operating systems. Sorry.
Same
here. Team now pegs Wednesday, November 8th is the date for Vista's release to manufacturing. They're saying that they're on track for the business release next month, which will barely make the end of November deadline. The OS is still expected to be generally available sometime in January. But you get the same thing, don't you? I get calls.
Oh yeah,
all the time.
No, I've had a couple.
I have Vista. I don't care. I don't care. I can't help you with Vista.
Yeah. I had one called and said, "Well, I was playing around with the," and he even said it, "beta version of Vista, and it crashed my machine. Can you help me get it back?" Wipe the machine out and reload it. No. I said, "Sorry, it's not out."
Yeah, first, you don't ever use a beta version of an operating system on your production machine.
You don't.
Well, it crashed and I lost my mail. What are you doing getting your mail on a beta machine?
I have no sympathy for folks.
Yeah, I can't. We don't do that. That's not something we do. Yeah,
you should have a backup ahead of time.
That's exactly right.
You shouldn't be doing it on your primary
machine.
Which
is hard to say, but we had a customer this week that brought his laptop in because it was acting funny, and then it actually failed completely while we had it, and he's mad that he doesn't have a backup, and we didn't tell him that he should have had a backup.
Well, it's your fault he didn't have a backup.
Yeah.
When did people stop taking any responsibility for their own actions? I'm sick and tired of that, too.
Long time ago.
All right, our next caller is Bob from Clyde, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hello. My mouse doesn't work properly. The scroll button?
Yeah.
I was trying to download delete for search plugins, for Firefox.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And ever since then, the manual scroll won't work, but if I press and do the auto lock, it works. But it will work in the email.
So you're saying it doesn't work in Firefox, but it works in email?
Correct.
The new version 2.0 of Firefox?
I believe so, yes.
What it sounds like is you've still got some sort of plug-in that has changed the behavior of the scroll wheel. One of the things I might suggest you do is look through the edit menu. Through the edit menu, go into preferences and take a look at some of the stuff and see if you've changed something. For example, under general, there's a check mark for auto scrolling and smooth scrolling. Check those things. I don't know what else to tell you.
Isn't there also a problem that some of the 1.x plugins aren't necessarily compatible with 2.0?
That's very true.
It could be, yeah. You might want to go, if you're using 2.0, you might want to go back to 1.5.7.
Or deactivate all of your plugins. And then one at a time, reactivate them and see which one causes you the problem.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
That's probably your best bet at this point. Well, that is one of the problems. People the nice thing about Firefox is you can add all these cool plugins. The bad thing about Firefox is you can add 1,000 cool plugins.
Yeah.
And most of them are written by amateurs. Most of them are not rigorously checked, and so they can cause problems on certain machines. And often enough, what we tell people is what changed. What was the last thing you did? In this particular case, if you've got something along the lines of a brand new version of Firefox or whatever, your best bet at that point is to go and uninstall or at least deactivate all of your plugins, and that will give you a little bit of an idea of what's going on. Because if it starts back up again, this is all troubleshooting 101. You disable all this stuff and it works. Now you enable one at a time. And yes, that's tiring. Yes, it is. But if you do that, then what you end up with is eventually you'll find that you've got your system exactly set up the way you want it.
Until you change
something
else.
Find out, right, yeah. And you'll find out, right. But you'll also find out what the culprit is so that if it happens again next time. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back...
I got the shop story of the week.
Shop story of the week. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. When we come back, we will talk about the shop story of the week. We'll talk about what happens at our website, soundbites.org. We'll talk about the poll and everything else. We've got a bunch of people on the line, so hang on. We'll get to you in just a couple of minutes. These people are very patient as we get through everything that we're doing. And we'll go through all of that and a lot more. We've got a lot more news for you, including a particularly interesting story about a very inexpensive laptop that's about to go up for sale. I'll be interested in talking about that and seeing what's going on. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with, did I mention it was Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. At 59 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Now, before we get back to the phones, let's talk about what goes on our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about, I have no idea what last week's poll was about. I seem to have lost track of what last week's poll was about. Oh, YouTube. It was about YouTube videos, whether or not you actually watch, check out videos on YouTube. Are we prepared for today? 344 of you voted, making it number 89, actually tied for number 88 on the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. For most of you, 33% of you, the response was, you who?
Mm-hmm.
23% once in a while, 23% rarely. 9% the Linux, 5% pretty regularly all the time, 5%, and 7 people said the Macintosh. This week's poll is about a great story I read this week. There's a new energy-efficient laptop that will be sold at Walmart. PC maker Everex Systems has launched a new energy-efficient laptop on Thursday. It has a Via Technologies, whichever you prefer, C7-M central processor inside. They want to sell it at Walmart stores for under $500. The Via microprocessor inside the Everex StepNote NC1500 provides 1.5 gigahertz performance at a very low power consumption of just 12 watts. That's pretty eco-friendly. The laptop runs Microsoft Windows XP Home, includes a 15.4-inch screen, built-in wireless LAN, DVD burner, 20% improvement in battery life over comparable systems. The notebook PC is available throughout the U.S. in over 2,900 Walmart stores, and it carries a price tag of $498. In addition to that 1.5 gigahertz DVD burner, built-in wireless LAN, 15.4-inch screen. It has a 60-gig hard drive, 512 megabytes of DDR2 RAM, DRAM, the Via Unichrome graphics system. It has a lithium-ion battery and weighs a mere 5.3 pounds. So the question is, would you buy a $500 laptop from Walmart? And the choices are, in a heartbeat, maybe after I see it, Dream On chuckles, does it run Linux, and is it a Mac? So far, we have 85 votes. The winners so far, 45% of you said maybe after I see it. So feel free to vote. Now, the one thing you need to be aware of, I bet some of you right out there now are drooling over this. I think you need to be aware that it's incredibly unlikely that this system will run Vista.
Guaranteed that it
won't. Doesn't have enough RAM. It doesn't have enough oomph. And graphics. I'll tell you what, under no circumstances will it run the new Aero graphics front end to Windows, which is really the only reason to buy Vista at this point. That's that. There's some security fixes underneath, but beyond that, the only other thing is the fact that every device can have its own audio level. Every program can have its own audio level. It should, however, work fine with any version of Linux.
What kind of warranty, though, do you get?
Well, there's the other question, isn't it? I don't know what the warranty is going to be like. I don't know what
where
the service
you get
and support are going to
be
like. But if you buy a $500 laptop, you're not looking for something you're going to keep for 5 years. You're not looking for something that you expect.
No. You'll be getting some folks, though.
Well, they're wrong. That's all there is to that. I'm sorry, but that's
Steve
the way
and
that
I can
works.
Yeah.
What do you mean it's going to cost $300 to fix? I bought it for $200.
Yeah.
Right. Well, too bad. Pay attention to what you're getting. If you're going to look at something like that, be aware of the lack of warranty. Be aware of the lack of support and service. Be aware that what you're buying is essentially a disposable computer.
And do me a favor, though, and Steve also, don't come to us and say, well, can you match this price?
The answer is no.
No.
Because you don't put out those.
No. We'll give you a much, much better computer for not much more, but.
But we can't match that. Exactly right. At any rate, go to our website, soundbites.org, and vote in the poll. When you're done with that, if you click on give us your opinion in the yellow box underneath the poll, you'll get to my website, which is AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Sammy's so confused, he don't know whether to scratch his watch or wind his butt.
Very nice. Very nice. Yes, sir. That's our Rob Linton. That's who that is.
That's good.
Can go to my website and check out what's there. And while you're there, check out my newsletter. Click on the newsletter tab. You'll see my newsletter. Three times a week, I send out a newsletter with Q&As, tips and tricks, website of the week, every once in a while, a rant and rave. And that comes to your email box three times a week. It only costs $15 a year. It's a heck of a deal, I personally believe. Plus,
and Nick, where's that website again?
That's AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Very nice.
In keeping with Halloween.
What happens when you work in radio and you have way too much time on your hands?
You find lots of sound effects to do every time I say,
I love the internet.
AskNick.com.
I wasn't prepared for that.
See, he only has two ready.
You only had two ready?
That's AskNick.com.
Very nice. All right. There you go. So that's what's going on at our website this week. And now we have the shop story of the week. All right, kiddies, gather around, sit down, grab your little teddies and your hot cocoa, because Uncle Dave has another shop story of the week. And here he is, Uncle Dave.
This one could probably either save or destroy marriages. I've had this happen a couple times, and I even had it happen to me once. And, you know, folks would come in, they bring in their computers, and they'll sit there and say, well, there's all these, I checked the history. And there's all this porn listings on there and that. And I know so-and-so is going to this site and that. Wait a minute. How do you know it's not you? Well, I don't go to those sites. Here's the true story, folks. Anybody surfing the web, that's anybody surfing the web, even though you don't see the sites come up because of the blockers and that you might have on your screen or software, you could wind up in your history with porn sites in the history. And it's just not you or your kids or anything else. It's just the way, you know, depending on your browser and that it blocks it, even though it doesn't come up on the screen, it might show up in the history. But it could be anybody.
It's not intentional. It's the way advertising works on the internet.
Yeah. Sites can get hijacked to where, you know, I tell this whole the story where this one gentleman, he had an article from Turkey that his family sent him, and he was very proud because it was this award that they got in Turkey. And he wanted to show it to his granddaughter. Now, he was not more than a couple hours going back to this website to show his granddaughter, because it had a picture of relatives over there in Turkey, and he wanted to show them to her. Well, he clicks on the same newspaper article, 50 porn sites pop up. You close one, 50 more pop up. And this is just within a few hours. So it can happen. Any site can get hijacked, and it can be in your history. So I had this one couple, the wife's thinking that the husband is, you know, surfing for porn. And it's like, no. Do you use the computer? Well, yeah. Well, then you could be getting them too. So it's whoever gets on that computer could be responsible for getting this stuff in history.
And your pop-up blocker is blocking the window from coming up, but it can end up in your cache.
That actually happened to me. I use Firefox, so I never see any of these sites. But, you know, I'm the only one who uses my machine because it's at work, it's locked, it's got all this, you know, protection on it. I looked in, and all of a sudden, I'm looking at my history, and there's all these sites that I know I didn't go to.
Your computer was lonely.
Exactly. The computer was lonely. Listen, we're gonna have to do something about you, Rob.
Rob, please stop right now. No, it's amazing how well he dances to that music.
It is. I don't want to know where you learned that, Rob, and I don't need you to do any more of that. In fact, here's a dollar. Stop.
Here's a dollar. Don't tell me that. I'll just egg me on more.
What? Do you have like, oh, look, we've got the Swingin' Shepherd Blues just set up right on the...
That's the beauty of working for the world's most largest and powerful media company is we have just about every sound effect and song we could ever want.
For a pound, I won't mess up this sketch.
Exactly. Well, that's Rob. He's going to dance in the back. Can you turn the webcam around? Because Or can you just put your shirt back on? That's
only
all we're
if
asking.
We charge by the minute.
Exactly. Could be a whole new line of money coming in for us. We got Dan and we got Rob in the back room. All we need now is a pole and a batch of singles. We're gonna go.
Got to be careful. We don't want people to get the wrong idea,
Rob.
If we got people waiting on the line because we've
seen
no
see
names.
Yeah, I see it, but the screen went blank on me on this end.
We have no names. There are people on the line.
How about now?
No.
How about now? We got nothing. Why don't you just tell me who's on the line and bring up a...
Let's see. How about Dan from Rochester?
Dan from Rochester. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
I went to turn on my computer. It's an older computer that I just strictly use for backup. I went to turn it on to make sure that the time changed for daylight savings time. And I get absolutely no power. I tried a different cord, and it's as though there is no power going into the machine.
Desktop or laptop?
Desktop.
So we should start with the obvious. Yeah. You sure it's plugged into both ends, the computer and the wall, and other things in the wall?
Does the fan on the power supply turn on?
Nothing turns on.
Then it's probably a power supply.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
if you plug something else into that outlet, does it work?
If you
plug a different computer in using that power cord, does it work?
Yeah.
If those things are both true, then the problem is likely to be
the power supply.
The power supply.
Yep. It may just be the fuse.
Buy a power supply like the CompUSA or some place.
Yeah, as long as you're comfortable, make sure you get the right size. As long as it's not a proprietary system.
Yeah, what brand computer is it?
It's just an e-machine.
You better double check because that is, a proprietary. But what you can do is if you're...
I'm looking at the power supply right now. It just says it's a Best Tech model number ATX.
That wouldn't mean squat to us. There's different sizes.
Right, it might have been custom designed to fit into that case. It may be an odd shape or size.
That's the key.
We'll pull it out, take it with you to the store, and see if you can find one that looks the same is one of the issues.
Okay.
I just had a Dell in the shop this week and had to get the custom Dell power supply because it's smaller and has the different brackets on it.
I had somebody with a Compaq, and there again, it's a 4 by 3 inches by 2.
Well,
two
but you best bet pull it anyway since the thing's dead. So pull the power supply, take it with you, see if they can match it up. And it's not just the dimensions. It's also the kind of power it draws, the kind of power it puts out on the other side,
whether it has a 12
where the
volt,
holes are, everything.
And it's whether it's got the 12-volt adapter on it.
Yeah, that extra 4-pin 12-volt adapter that the Pentium 4s and later need.
Do all the cables that are coming out of it, do they come with a new power supply?
Yes.
Yeah, all the ones that are that go into the
just
case
just remember
itself,
where
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Unhooked everything, right. You know, like your different
the hard drive, the CD drive, the floppy drive.
Yep. The most important one is the motherboard.
Right, the motherboard connect. We're starting to see power supplies not come with floppy drive power cables because so many PCs don't have floppy drives anymore.
Yeah, it's got that. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good luck. That's the tough part is when they're not really, in a lot of cases, they're not standardized parts.
Mm-hmm.
Our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Okay, eMachine laptop, 2 weeks, of course, after the warranty ended.
Of course.
Of course. All right, I smoked the operating system. The original problem was it wouldn't come back up again, or I could only go into safe mode. So, mm-hmm. All right, reinstalled the OS, still have the same problem. At this point, I'm going to take a step back. I just need to look at whether I've got a motherboard problem or a hard disk problem. Because
right.
when I go to recovery console, check disk is acting funny.
All right, then 10 to 1 odds, if you've reloaded the operating system from fresh, 10 to 1 odds, it's the hard drive.
That's easy to fix.
Yeah. You pop in a new laptop hard drive and give that a shot.
Now, again, you've got an eMachine. Make sure it's a standardized drive with a standardized connector. It probably is.
Yeah, the drive might be standard, but the connector may not be.
That's the important thing to look for.
Yeah, it's a Fujitsu drive. I was trying to find an actual low-level utility, but they've got a ATA exerciser, so I'll just have it. I'll beat on it for 24 hours and see if it screams uncle.
There
exactly.
you go.
It's the best thing to do.
Perfect.
Good for you. We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. We will talk about Microsoft's patent case and the Supreme Court getting involved. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 23 minutes after the hour, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, Microsoft's patent case, the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, saludes that Friday it will review a lawsuit testing the limits of international patent claims in a case that could have wide-ranging effect on the U.S. software industry. The case pits network giants AT&T and Microsoft against each other. It will examine whether Microsoft is liable for patent infringement costs after distributing a speech coding technology patent by AT&T on overseas copies of the Windows operating system. This case has huge implications for both patent holders and software vendors, with software vendors potentially off the hook for huge patent awards if the Supreme Court sides with Microsoft. There's a lot of money at stake in this. There's probably hundreds of millions of dollars or more. Microsoft said basically it sent one master copy of Windows overseas on a so-called golden disk to be copied onto PCs sold outside the U.S. Microsoft says they shouldn't be liable for patent infringement for the hundreds of thousands of copies of Windows made from that master disk. That's up to the Supreme Court. The Microsoft also argued that software object code isn't a component of a patented invention. Now, aren't they kind of arguing against themselves in that? Software is not patentable is basically what they're saying.
Yeah.
Doesn't that invalidate every patent Microsoft holds? No, seriously. Every patent Microsoft holds?
That was a lot of the early look and feel lawsuits between Microsoft and Apple in the early 80s. And Apple was showing that the exact same screen can be created with multiple different codes. Just write it in a different language is one. Yeah. So the code should be copyrightable, and the screen should be copyrightable, the way it looks.
Right.
But they'll sit there and say, well, that's just for the overseas version.
Yeah, that's what I found interesting, is that they're not including whatever this feature is here in the U.S.
U.S.
Right.
It's only for the overseas one. So it doesn't apply here.
Are they acknowledging that they did steal AT&T's copyright?
Really? Yeah.
They're saying they're not liable. That doesn't necessarily mean they didn't steal it.
It's getting on the razor's edge.
Right, and that's why God made lawyers, somebody made lawyers. Might not have been God, but somebody made lawyers. And that's why they're rich and I'm not. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Naples, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Yeah, hi, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I unplugged we have an EMAC, and I unplugged it a couple weeks ago because of a thunderstorm. Plugged it back in. The date and time is all off. And when I go to change the date and time, it asks for an administrator password or administrator name and password, and it doesn't work. And it doesn't accept it.
Well, the first problem is probably the battery is weak.
I'm assuming that, yeah.
Yeah, right. When you had it unplugged, it lost its date and time.
Right.
Are you sure you're entering the administrator password exactly as you created it? Uppercase and lowercase and whatnot?
Well, that could be the problem. I tried all sorts of different combinations, and it doesn't work.
It just shakes at you, says that's not the wrong or not the right password?
It says invalid username and password.
Yeah, there is a way to reset the master password, but I don't know if I want to tell it on the radio.
Now, listen, let me tell you what I did. I got the restore DVD, and because I went into Mac Help, and they showed me how to, or they basically told me how to do that. And you know, you put it in, you hold the.
Don't tell us on the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why doesn't he email you?
Well, you have to have physical access to the computer in order to reset the password.
Even so,
that should work. One thing that I found on a recent machine is I had to use the exact same version of the OS. That I had a machine that had been running 10.2, and I tried to use the 10.4 commands, and it didn't work. I had to go back and find a 10.2 disk. So maybe find the disk that originally came with the computer for the original OS it had installed with the EMAC, yeah, and try using that command. It depends on how locked down it is. The other way is to make a new administrator username.
Hello?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Listen, I've done the restore with the DVD, and it basically asked me to reinstall the operating system, and it's going to archive and save the settings.
Well, that's another way to do it, yeah. But when you save your settings, it saves the old password, too.
Well, that's right.
So you either want to change the password, or you can reinstall the system and make a new username. So it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other, depending on how far you want to go into putting a new OS in, creating a new username, and then seeing if the old new username, new password, and then you can find the old files.
Right.
But if make sure that the disk you're using is the original that came with the EMAC and try the reset function there. And you should be able to reset the password independent of reinstalling the system.
All right. Good luck on that. I gotta tell you about my Mac.
You still got it going?
No, it's still going. It's unbelievable. No. This is a mini. This is the Mac Mini, and I have to tell you, I really like it. I have to say that there are things about. I am so used now to Linux that there are things in the Mac interface that seem clunky to me. I know that I will be crucified.
Well, whatever you're used to, and that's the big problem in switching.
Exactly. But I must tell you, and for those out there who are looking into this issue, we get these questions once in a while. It's both my Linux box and my Mac are sitting on a Windows network, and it found all the shares I told it to go find. It found all the printers I told it to go find. It's now a fully blown member of my network, working just like all the others with absolutely no difference.
The Windows machine doesn't know any better.
Doesn't know, and the Mac knows and doesn't care. Fine, I'll use that. That's not a big deal. So I'm very impressed. It was a lot easier than I actually thought it would be.
And especially because the Mini is such a physically small computer. It's 6 inches square.
It's a toy-looking thing.
Right, it doesn't look like a real computer. And basically what Apple did is there are two ways to think about it. It's a laptop without a screen.
Right.
So then you put whatever screen on it you want, but it's as small as a laptop, so it's easy to carry around. Or they took the traditional tower computer that we're all used to and realized that hardly anyone ever uses the tower options
right.
to put 27 hard drives and 15 video cards or whatever. So they took all that tower stuff off, and you're left with a laptop without a screen.
Right.
So it's a very small computer. And it's one of the unfortunate ironies of Apple is that over the years, Apple has been considered a toy computer. You know, the Macintosh is just a toy computer. But one of the criticisms is that there aren't enough games for it.
Yeah.
So they get blasted for being a toy, but then they get blasted because there's not enough games. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I'm trying not to put. I know Ambrosia makes a local company makes a bunch of games for the Mac. I'm trying not to put any on so that I get some time on it.
Yeah.
Well, I've got two of the smallest PCs.
Yeah.
The ones I use for my test bench.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a motherboard.
A raw motherboard.
Motherboard sitting there. You don't get any smaller than that.
Exactly.
It doesn't take up a lot of bulk space or worry about. Bang it into it. It just sits there.
All right. Caller is Brian from Chi-Lai, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Good morning, fellas. Thank you very much for taking my call. Actually, good afternoon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Reason that I'm calling is that I run Mozilla Firefox almost exclusively. I find that when I log into different websites, sometimes for video or for audio streams, I'll receive a window that says missing plugins. And it asked me to install it manually. Mm-hmm. And I've gone to the Mozilla.com site where that has an add-on for like Windows.
Different plugins.
Right? Well, add-ons and plugins are two different things.
Right. Okay.
What plugins are you missing? It will tell you, for example, the Flash plugin.
And it usually gives you a link right in that box to go and download it.
Yeah. What plugins are you missing?
I don't know.
Unprepared.
What's that?
You are unprepared.
Unprepared as I am, yes. What I do is, for instance, if I log into a local radio station to listen to a stream,
sure.
but a local could be in Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Up on the top of the screen, the browser will come on. It'll read Mozilla Firefox, and then it says missing plugin.
Right, and you click on the button.
Okay.
And that should install whatever plugin you're missing.
It'll take you to another screen where you can download that plugin.
Or it will tell you you have to install it manually, and then the button will say manual install. You click on that button, and it takes you to the website of whatever plugin you need to download and install.
And for audio streaming, it's usually the Real Player or the Windows Media Player or the QuickTime Player. So okay, you can go to those three sites and download them manually if you want.
Right.
Okay, great. I'll give it a shot, and if I run into problems, I'll give you a call next week. Better prepared.
There you go.
Excellent. There we go. Thank you, Brian. But try that first. I will tell you that I downloaded the Real Player for the Mac yesterday. It was the only plugin apparently I was missing because it comes with QuickTime.
Yeah.
And I downloaded that. I do have the one thing I cannot do on my Linux box is a lot of the multimedia stuff because I got a great 64-bit system from Dave. And it has, because it's 64-bit, there isn't a 64-bit Flash player yet. There isn't a 64-bit, any of those players actually are not available in 64-bit. So the 64-bit version of Firefox that I'm using doesn't work with them. I'm going to load the 32-bit version of Mozilla, see if that works with them. But I haven't done that yet because I've been too busy actually, you know.
Like working. Everything else, you know, playing Leapfrog, it's got to catch up.
Exactly. Yep.
One of the issues we run into on the Mac is the Windows Media Player. Microsoft's Windows Media Player stopped at like version 7.
Yeah.
They did have a version 9, but they have since discontinued Windows Media Player for Mac. And partially we think is because another company had already written a better one.
Yeah.
And so we have the link.
Send me a link on that.
We have the link on our website already.
Excellent.
It's called Flip for Mac, FLIP number 4 MAC. Flip for Mac, and it allows you to play Windows Media files inside of QuickTime. So it works inside your browser, so you don't have to launch a separate program like you do with the Real Player.
Nice. Now, I have to say, on my 32-bit Linux boxes, like this one, I can play media all day long. It's just my 64-bit version doesn't work.
Well, it's ahead of its time, and you know,
you're right. People will catch up with me.
You're just waiting for the folks to catch up to you.
I'm a trendsetter, not a trend follower.
Ooh.
Our next caller is Mike from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How you doing, guys?
Good.
Great show.
Thank you.
I think it's hopefully it'll be an easy question for you. I've got a PC.
Questions are always easy, Mike. It's the answers that are hard.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a PC in my den. Roadrunner comes in, goes to the modem and to a wireless router, and we use our laptop in our kitchen and other areas of our house. And in the last week, for some reason, we've been getting kicked off the internet, both on the laptop and on the PC. And we do the usual reboot and unplug the modem, unplug the router, let it reset, and then we can get back on. But this has been happening the last week, 10 days.
Well, do one thing at a time to try to isolate it. If you reboot the router and not the cable modem, then it's a router problem.
Okay.
If you reboot the cable modem only and it works, then it's the cable modem. So, you know, it's one of the basics of troubleshooting is only do one thing.
But, you know, I've been hearing a lot of these lately. I don't know if your place has been getting a number of calls, but, you know, a lot of folks have been calling the shop and complaining about that. And I think a number of them have been solved by just the replacement of the cable modem.
Right. I've also been running into a lot of it with DSL modems from Frontier.
Same there.
In fact, in my office, our IP address has changed like 3 times in the last 2 weeks. So I have to reboot my network router in order to get the new internet feed in. And I don't know why they're doing that because it usually doesn't change.
Right. Mine actually changed twice in the last month. It changed one day just out of nowhere, and it changed again this morning, which I'm attributing to the wind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had poles going sideways in our backyard.
Right. Yeah, so reset just your network router and see if that fixes the problem, and then you can try to isolate where the problem might be.
Do one thing at a time, because otherwise you're going to be chasing your tail all around and around.
And then check your address. If you go to a browser and type whatismyip.com, it will tell you what your external public address is, and sort of keep track of that. And if your public address is changing, that means there's nothing really wrong. It's just you have to reset your local router when your address changes.
Well, if he goes to the command prompt, types...
IP. Well, that'll tell him the computer's IP address.
No, if he goes ipconfig /all, that lists his DNSs and everything.
Right, but not his public IP address.
Oh, if okay,
router setup screen or just whatismyip.com. Will tell you what your public IP address is, and you can see if that's changing. So if your cable router or DSL router gets a new address from your provider, then your local network router has to reset to get that new address. So it could be there's nothing wrong. It could be just your provider has been changing your address.
Now, the nice thing about having your address change on you is that on the Soundbites homepage, when you vote, we collect your IP address. So you can't vote twice. And if your IP address changes, you can vote again.
Vote early, vote often. What was that? The Chicago presidential election?
That's the Chicago motto.
Motto.
Exactly. Vote early, vote often.
And all the dead people could vote, too.
Right. And don't forget, we get to vote next, not this coming week, but the week after.
Oh, one other thing I should remind folks right now. That's a good thing to bring up. And I know Steve and I are going to be running into it, and so are you. Your College of Business. As you know, right now we just went on to daylight savings times. One thing you folks might want to do...
Check your computers.
...is in your computer, there is a setting that says automatically change for daylight saving time. Right now, you want to uncheck that because starting next year, daylight savings time is going to start earlier.
And end later.
3 weeks early. And a change 1 week later.
Right.
So it's going to change the whole formula. So uncheck that box because it's going to change the time on your...
A future OS update will... add those new dates in there,
right.
Theoretically.
Hopefully. Right.
But yeah, for right now, uncheck it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, with the folks who are on the phone, and you MySpace users better definitely tune in because we've got some information for you. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you are listening to Sound Bites. Now, before we get back to the phones, I told you I'd address all you MySpace folks. Reports Friday indicate that a MySpace user was emailing potential victims, inviting them to visit a fraudulent login page where they were asked to enter their email address and password. That information was then sent to a server located in France that took advantage of the way MySpace organizes URLs in order to give the fake login page a believable web address, something that could confuse even security-conscious users. The attacker had registered a MySpace account named login_home_index_html, meaning that the MySpace page hosted a fake login looking like a legitimate place where users would sign on to the space. So if you are a MySpace user and you added... Because I know that while some of you are smart about this, some of you just randomly enter whoever somebody emails you and says, I want to be your friend. Okay, I'll go.
Yeah.
If you entered a friend and then were asked to log into their space on Friday, my suggestion is that you immediately change your password. And I mean immediately change your password. Make sure that when you log in, you're logging into your main address. Just go to myspace.com. And go from there, bookmark that correctly, and make sure you're in the right place. MySpace does have a database of usernames that are off limits in order to prevent this type of attack. They did catch it very quickly, but it's possible that you have been tricked. So if you're a MySpace user, change your password. Make sure that you know where you're logging in and what you're doing. Our next caller is Mike from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Good morning, fellas. I just wanted to let you know I screwed up myself yesterday on the internet and hit the wrong web page, and I got all kinds of viruses. But now my home page I click on is usually Google.
Yep.
And I click on it. It still says my default, when you go to internet options and all that, I got Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to my internet options, and my default page still says it's supposed to be going to Google. Every time I click on that, I get a... safeie.com, something that tells me to get some malware downloads. I'm really computer illiterate.
Yeah, you've been hijacked.
First, stop using Internet Explorer to begin with. That's first. But secondly, you need to head to the Security Tango.
Yep.
That's securitytango.com.
Securitytango.com, okay.
Click on the Let's Dance button. print out that page and follow every single step. Check off each step as you do it. Do not skip any steps.
Yeah, you can change your homepage setting in that internet options, but you've been hijacked by some malware, malicious software, that changes it back to download more malicious software.
Right, and so what you want to do is dance the security tango, which should clear out the stuff that's preventing you from going to your own homepage.
Okay. All right, so go to the Let's Dance on Security Tango and then follow that step for step.
You got
it. And when you're done with that, explore the rest of the Security Tango site, including my blog and everything else.
I'll do that. Nick, thank you very much. I'll try that.
Thank you. And then, of course, go to AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. He wasn't ready. He was actually working in there, actually talking to people, doing stuff. That's AskNick.com. Very nice. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to put a plug in there, too, though, on the Soundbites page. I have a clip
up
there.
Why you got to do all unprepared on me? I wasn't ready for that.
I thought you were always prepared.
Right, always
be prepared. That's the Boy Scout marching
song. You guys
song.
Are sitting in there in the luxurious studios.
I know, and you got to shovel a coal and do all that other stuff while we're in here in the spa. I understand that.
Yeah.
I feel bad for you.
I'm sure it keeps you up
nights. If I thought you were worth coming in here and joining us in the hot tub, I would ask you to.
That's a scary, scary thought.
Yeah, that's from every side. I don't care who you are, which one of you are, you shouldn't be in a hot tub with us. There's no question of that.
No, I wanted to put a plug in there off the Soundbites page. I put up a tip each week.
Yes, he does.
And check those out, folks. You know, different things I think, you know, from emails and that I get from you folks, I try to address that in a tip and publish at least once a week.
There you
go.
They're
up there for you.
And they're all, by the way, excellent.
Thank you.
All right, our next caller is Josh from Greece, New York. Welcome, Josh. What's your question?
Hey, I have a hard drive problem. With my 250 gig hard drive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whenever I connect it and I go to start it up, it says ntl.dr.dll is missing. Press any key to restart.
Are you trying to, is this hooked up while you're trying to boot the machine?
No, it's a second hard drive.
So it sounds like it's trying to boot from that second hard drive, and it doesn't have an OS on it. That's the NT loader, so it doesn't know how to load Windows.
In other words, it's not attached or turned on when you're loading the computer?
It's connected as slave, and it does have Windows on it.
There's your problem. As a slave drive, it's not going to go looking for the bootloader, but it's going to try to load it. What you need to do is this. Make sure that in the BIOS, you're set up to boot from your real boot drive.
Yeah, your main drive.
In fact, there's often two settings. One is boot order, so it's CD, then hard drive. And then the second setting is which hard drive to boot from.
Yep.
And make sure you're picking the real hard drive that has the
because
real Windows
Because what it sounds like
it.
Is happening is trying to boot from that one. When you remove that one, it goes to the other one.
Yep.
But you want to make sure it starts with the other one first, and then you should be fine. So give that a try. Let us know. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When Congressman
Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Back to the phones, John.
Well, actually, no, I want to get my plug in.
Oh, right.
Coming up weekend after next, November 10th, 11th, and 12th, local convention, Astronomicon, science fiction convention. I think this is its 10th or 11th year. So it's really great, you know, local event. This year they're celebrating women in science fiction. The author guest of honor is Catherine Osorio. The artist guest of honor is actually a little more exciting for me. Julie Bell is coming, and she's bringing her husband, Boris Vallejo.
There you go.
and John and Bijo Trimble are the fan guests of honor. So Bijo Trimble, the lady that saved Star Trek in the 60s. So that's it's really really a great convention. A lot of artists and authors and writers, Nebula Award winners, and really great for the literary fans among us.
Right.
And that's at the Clarion Riverside Hotel on November 10th, 11th, and 12th.
We'll have our local winners around.
Julie, I never can pronounce her last name, Shurzenza, and Nancy Kress, who teaches at Brockport, will probably be there.
Excellent.
And so that's available, information available at astronomicon.info, and the link is on our website as well.
Perfect. Now back to the phones. John from Rochester. Welcome, John. What's your question? John?
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I have a quick question. And this sounds stupid because I've been using computers for so long.
how do I simply set up a folder somewhere in Windows, not on my desktops, to just put files, basically Word docs?
Open whatever folder you want that to go into, even your C drive,
yeah.
And then use the new folder command from the file menu.
So I go to the C drive off the start menu?
Sure. No, there is no C drive
computer.
In the start menu. You have to go to My Computer.
From My Computer, right.
Which is either on your desktop or in the start menu.
So click Start and click My Computer, right?
And then the C drive.
And then you'll see the C drive there. Double-click that to open it up.
Yep.
Right-click on it, or from the File menu, select New Folder.
Yeah.
Give it a name.
Right, or you can right-click on a folder and choose the New Folder command as well. So you can do that from any folder anywhere on your computer.
Yeah, it can be from anywhere.
Now, when I want to access that folder, I was told that if I have too many shortcuts on my desktop, it slows down the computer.
So that's true.
Well, not too many shortcuts, too many different icons.
Yeah, folders take up less space than the actual icons. Like, I've seen folks put all their documents out on the desktop instead of putting them all in one folder. Go ahead.
So if I have it just in one folder, even though when I open up the folder, there might be, 9 or 10 different Word docs,
right.
it won't slow it up. Right.
Takes up less resource.
If you start getting into the thousands of files in a folder, that it will slow down.
Right. But in general, 9, 10, 20, 50, even 100, if they're all the same, what's really going to slow you down is the icons. So if they're all Word documents, that's really one instance of the icon multiplied X number of times. So that's going to be fine. So if you do that, you should be fine.
And once you create that folder, you can right-click on it and then say Send To, and there's a shortcut to desktop.
Okie doke.
You can access it from there.
Our next caller, Tim from Spencerport. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you. This is about my wireless laptop and my router. I bought both of them kind of as a deal at one of the local stores.
Sure.
And when I have the laptop at college, it accesses the wireless networks. They're fine. I never drop it. The little icon in the taskbar that shows networking shows a good signal, no problem. At home, sometimes it shows a good signal off my wireless router. Other times it shows the little X through that, saying I don't have a signal, but I still can access the internet.
Right.
So it actually is getting through. It makes me think that there's a configuration issue with the router itself.
It may also be just signal quality
in your neighborhood or your house.
Well, in your house, if there's the kitchen between you, your computer, and your laptop, then the wireless signal has trouble getting through all that metal.
Well,
if you have an older house with chicken wire over plaster, that is a big problem. And then now sometimes even the newer houses, they're using aluminum studs instead of wood, and that can be a problem.
And even if you're in the same room with your wireless router, if you've got a bunch of other devices that also use the 2.4 gigahertz.
Cordless telephone, microwave oven.
Microwave ovens, a lot of... some devices, wireless, this and that, have those things. Those can all cause problems. So if you've got that, I don't know what to tell you except to buy a different router that has a different signal that it uses, of course, 2.4 gigahertz.
Multiple antennas, the MIMO can help.
Can help, that sort of thing. But other than that, you're kind of stuck. I'm afraid we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Remember, next week, call early, call often. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, who puts up with an amazing amount of stuff from us, and vice versa, of course. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, check out the website, vote in the poll, and everything else. We'll see you next week right here on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.